Welcome to the GGB Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature the leaders of the National Indian Gaming Commission, Chairman Jonadev Chaudhuri and Vice Chairwoman Catherine Ism Klaus, about how their agency is changing as a result of a new president. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing site for land-based and online casinos in North America. The National Indian Gaming Commission is inherently an apolitical organization in the federal government. Even though it is housed under the Department of the Interior, it is still an independent agency. So a change of administration doesn't impact the NIGC as much as it might Interior. Chairman Jonadev Chaudhuri and Vice Chairwoman Catherine Ism Klaus sat down with me in April at the Indian Gaming Trade Show in San Diego to discuss the transition between the Obama and Trump administration and how the commission has been staying the course.
Too many spells to break. Too many nights awake and no
Jonadev Chaudhuri and Catherine Ism Klaus, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. I feel very honored that I've had the chairman and the vice chairman here. I've interviewed every chairman of the NIGC since it started, so now I'm getting two for one. So thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Roger. It's great to be out here in California, and I'm sorry if it's a little bit windy in the background. I just had to insist on an outdoor discussion because it's just too beautiful to...
We'll set the scene. We're here at the NIGA Trade Show. We're sitting out on the outside balcony on the bay in San Diego. It couldn't be nicer. So thanks for sitting down, and I enjoy this scenery for sure. So let's talk about, we've just had a change in administration, and that always affects every government agency to a certain extent. How has it affected the NIGC so far?
Well, let me first begin by, again, saying thank you, Roger. Appreciate the platform to be able to discuss where we are at as an agency. My favorite part of being at the agency is working with the incredible team, both on the commission itself as well as within the entire staff. And so I'm always honored to be joined by our vice chair, who has incredible background and perspective that she brings to the commission, as well as our third commissioner, Associate Commissioner Sequoia Simmermeyer. Mm-hmm. Together, we make up the commission itself. We are all governed by IGRA, right, as everybody in the agency is,
sure,
and our terms are set forth in IGRA. So we're all under 3-year statutory terms, and I think the structure of our terms and the structure of the commission was created by design to ensure independent, fair regulation of the Indian gaming industry. I think it was a recognition of the importance of the industry that you had statutory terms assigned to the commissioners, as well as a diversity of perspectives cooked into the commission. So no more than 2 members of the commission can be from a given party.
Mm-hmm.
2 of the commissioners at a minimum have to be members of recognized tribal nations. And so there was some wisdom in terms of how the commission was structured and a recognition that regulation is inherently a non-political activity. You're
correct,
applying the law, and as a regulator, I take that very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. You know, we think of ourselves as somewhat non-political as a regulatory agency.
Sure.
So, we just kind of see ourselves as a stable agency moving
mm-hmm.
forward. No big sea changes right now.
Right.
Just kind of on our same path that the chairman has set out for
okay.
us.
So give us some of your background on where you came from and what you bring to the commission.
Sure. I like our other commissioners, I'm also a former lawyer. We're, as you know, chairman always says, we're recovering lawyers.
Right.
And I started out in private practice working for tribal governments.
Okay.
And then went into the Department of the Interior for the Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs.
Okay.
Where I handled his gaming portfolio. So I have some experience on the land and policy gaming side before mm-hmm. coming over to the commission.
Okay, great. Now, we do have a new Interior Secretary. Now, you're technically under the umbrella of the Interior Department?
We're an independent agency housed in Interior.
Okay.
And so there, like I said, the law not just allows for it, but requires a certain amount of fair, unbiased regulation, and that's largely expressed through our makeup as an independent agency. That said, we have not only an interest, but a requirement in maintaining very good relationships with the Department of the Interior, as well as other agencies who work on various facets of gaming. Okay. So we maintain good relationships with DOI, as well as Department of Justice, FBI, and other agencies.
Okay. So I know we just came out of the NIGA annual meeting there, and Chairman Stevens made a nice comment when you were leaving the stage, saying that he thinks he doesn't have any disagreements with you, which he couldn't say about every NIGC chairman. And I think that really reflects what you've been doing with the tribes. You really have been forging a cooperative relationship instead of an adversarial relationship. Tell us why you took that tack, or was it even intentional?
Well, and thank you, Roger. Well, absolutely, it was intentional because we're regulators first and foremost, and as a regulator, it's your job to apply and implement the law. And IGRA is at its heart, at least as it relates to NIGC, it's about regulatory compliance. Now, there are a number of ways you can achieve compliance, but given the structure of IGRA, which places tribes as the primary regulators of Indian gaming, and given the realities on the ground of there being 6,000 plus, or approximately 6,000 tribal regulators in the field who are engaged in the primary regulation of Indian gaming, while there are only, I don't want to mention how many, I think there's 120 or so of us working on the federal side. As a matter of necessity, in addition to the law, we have to have positive relationships with our regulatory partners. So there are different ways you can achieve compliance. You can take an adversarial approach, or you can recognize that true compliance is best achieved through work on the front end, through meaningful communication, collaboration, and doing whatever you can to have people trained to avoid compliance issues. So we've tried to honor the mandate of IGRA that requires us to provide trainings, to provide technical assistance, to work with tribes, to avoid compliance issues. And the interesting thing about that is when we have, we never shy away from enforcement. We never have and we never will. And in my time at NIGC, we brought some very, very severe, very, very large enforcement actions. But when we've done that, because we've worked with our tribal partners to the extent that we've had a buy-in and an understanding from Indian Country, and recognize because folks recognize that our enforcement is about really protecting the overall integrity of the industry, and it's not to just tally up NOVs just to make ourselves look good.
Sure.
And it really is about achieving true compliance. So for true compliance, you have to have, you know, people talk about carrots and sticks. I'm kind of a chubby guy. I prefer donuts. You have to have a really good donut with a lot of sugar on it and a pretty darn big stick at the same time.
Right.
And so we're very pro-donut and very pro-stick at NIGC. But navigating the most meaningful path forward in terms of being support, I mean, not shying away from enforcement, but approaching compliance that's also respectful of sovereignty, that's the trick.
Sure.
And that's what I think all of us from D.C. to every office in the field, we're supportive of sovereignty, but we're regulators first and foremost.
Right.
Yeah, if I can just add to that very briefly, I completely agree with that idea of balance. But, you know, like the rest of the federal government, we have a trust responsibility. We're here for the benefit of Indian Country. So, you know, we don't approach things in this adversarial way that was referenced.
Right. Now,
great point.
Now, you have really increased the training. I believe you're doing some online training now, which expands your capabilities.
Yeah. Well, as part of our technology, I mean, everything dovetails with, you know, we have four major initiatives that I'm happy to talk about, but one of them is staying ahead of the technology curve. And at first blush, that sounds like a policy or regulatory priority. So you need to stay abreast of technology developments to provide meaningful trainings or to develop regulations in a meaningful way. If what we do in the day-to-day work that we do is trainings, we have to have the online capability to do that. So we've invested in some hardware that's allowed us to do that. Our technology division has enabled us to engage in online trainings, and we'll be embarking on those, I think, in the fall, starting in the fall. More.
Okay.
Looking to acquire valuable players for your online casino or even your land-based property? Check out iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing site for legal online gaming in the U.S. iGamingPlayer is one of the first and only online affiliate marketing sites licensed in New Jersey. iGamingPlayer delivers quality customers and profitable players with its mix of online gaming news, play for free games, and information on the best promotions offered by its partner online casinos, poker rooms, and land-based casinos. iGamingPlayer uses the vast knowledge about players and their behaviors to deliver players to your online casino and act as the bridge to your bricks and mortar property. So visit iGamingPlayer.com to see what you've been missing.
Explain what you do during your consultations. You mentioned a series of them that you're having in the next few months. You have one here at NIGA as well. What's on the agenda when you go out to various parts of the country to do these consultations?
Well, first and foremost, we're here to listen. Consultation has to be meaningful, and it has to be done in a respectful way. It can never be a pretense. It can never take the place of meaningful communication. So we, as an agency, have committed never to put pen to paper until hearing from our partners. And I think we would have done that without the legal underpinnings of consultation in place. But beyond that, there are strong legal underpinnings of consultation in place. As Vice Chair mentioned, as a federal agency, we have a trust responsibility to Indian country. That's true for all aspects. That trust responsibility is between the United States and all tribal nations,
right.
And that informs every agency. But in addition to that, there's a consultation executive order that has been, I think it was first put into place by Clinton and has been reaffirmed by every president since. And so there's an executive order in place. And on top of that, we have a consultation policy.
Mm-hmm.
So consultation is extremely important because we are humble enough to know that the innovation in Indian gaming that we need to stay abreast from comes from tribal communities, and we're there to listen. Let me just kind of go over the topics briefly.
Sure.
That we're planning on consulting, and I know it's a podcast, so we're going to be pressed for time. We're consulting on Class 2 minimum internal controls grandfathering provisions. Mm-hmm. I know it's very esoteric.
Well, it's not. Class 2 and the bright line have been out there for many, many years.
Yeah, but this deals with a smaller subset of Class 2 issues, but it's an important subset for tribes who use some of the grandfathered games in their operations.
Yeah, right.
But we're also going to be consulting on our strategic plan, rural outreach, supporting a strong workforce, management contracts, technical standards for mobile gaming devices, changes to fee regulations, and voluntary non-binding Class 3 minimum internal controls guidance.
Okay.
So it covers almost every aspect of what we do, and frankly, by the time we're done with all of this, every four of our fundamental priorities will have been the subject of extensive consultation, and we're thankful for those discussions as they help inform our strategic plan as we move forward. And I'm speaking way too much, Vice Chair. It must be the California sun.
All three of the commissioners go out to these consultations?
Well, when possible.
Okay.
When possible.
Okay.
Yeah, and we see the consultations as a dialogue. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes you see agencies only consulting on proposed regulations. We're taking a bit of a broader view on policy initiatives and just kind of our general work at the agency, trying to really have engagement with tribes on how we should work.
Okay. So, and you're also in new offices in D.C., I understand?
Yes, yes, and, you know, we're very proud of that. They're not, I mean, we're proud to be federal regulators. They're not as fancy as, well, I don't want to throw NIGA under the
bus. Well, they're,
the bus,
they're pretty fancy.
Well, I've been to NIGA's offices. Yes. They're very nice, but yep. we're proud of our office space, and our chief of staff and deputy chief of staff has been working on a way to, you know, one of the great honors of being at NIGC, Indian Country provides gifts that are property of the agency when they provide them. We're looking at a respectful way to highlight those gifts in a way that tells the story of the agency, mm-hmm. tells the story of Indian gaming as a whole. I'm thankful for the work that Shannon O'Loughlin, our chief of staff, and Christine Thomas, our deputy chief of staff, have put in with that. But yeah, brand new office space.
Right. Now we've seen a lot of tribal enterprises now cross over into the commercial sector. I know you don't regulate that, but do you keep an eye on what's going on, you know, when they do get into the commercial gaming sector?
Well, let me speak to that. In terms of what we keep an eye on, a lot of the times people focus on our compliance authorities.
Right.
And that's rightfully so. As a regulatory body, you have to have healthy, assertive, robust compliance wing. But as I mentioned before, because of the work that people put in to include trainings in IGRA, or the requirement to do trainings, we have an important role to play in preventative medicine. Mm-hmm. We have a role to play in providing meaningful trainings. So that's a little bit broader than our mm-hmm. compliance authority. That encompasses doing whatever we can to support Indian Country and understanding the broader landscape of Indian gaming mm-hmm. so that they can make informed, wise choices as they support their operations. So we have new leadership trainings mm-hmm. that we put on. We have roles and responsibilities trainings that we put on, gamesmanship trainings that we put on. So part of having meaningful trainings is keeping an eye on developments in the industry. Mm-hmm. So whether they're the engagement in the commercial arena or the development of ancillary businesses secondary to Indian gaming, that's important for us to keep an eye on so that when we talk about best practices, we can intelligently talk about them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a time that ancillary businesses were there largely to drive traffic to gaming operations.
Sure.
You know, in many communities, the roles have reversed. Sometimes the money leaders are the ancillary businesses. And to the extent that creates regulatory issues, you know, we need to be aware of the interplay of various industries with the Indian gaming industry. And again, I'm speaking way too much. It must be the California sun. It's got me in a talkative mood.
So when you look at, Catherine, when you look at these ancillary businesses, I was speaking with an architect today who said he's working with a lot of tribes that are now concentrating on non-gaming developments. There's a lot of competition now to tribal gaming, not just within the tribal gaming sector, but with commercial gaming as well. And again, I know the NIGC doesn't regulate any of that, but again, do you keep an eye on that? Do you kind of keep an eye on the trends that are going on in Indian gaming?
Well, certainly we like to stay informed. I think all of our staff just has interest in this, and, you know, as just part of our general knowledge about the industry, we certainly try to keep abreast of what's going on. But as the chairman said, it's not an enforcement area for us. It's just kind of part of our general knowledge and background.
Right. Okay. So we've seen Indian gaming grow. You know, it had a couple of hiccups there for a couple of years, but now it seems to be, revenue seems to be increasing again. Does this make you feel like you have to really pay more attention, that you have to be more effective than you've been in the past? Not necessarily under your regime, but under previous regimes.
That's an interesting question. I haven't thought about it that way. I don't know that it's more. I think, you know, we want to kind of keep things going on the right path. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we're just always trying to do the best that we can in terms of regulation. And, you know, I hope that we can continue on this path where revenue continues to increase for Indian Country.
I mean, just to add to Vice Chair's statement on that, you know, the size of the industry is a good thing, but whenever you've got a larger industry, they're always growing challenges in any evolving industry. So we care about staying on top of the regulatory side of things, but we also see an important role for us in the public education arena. Again, in addition to our compliance authorities, IGRA contemplates a role for us to help ensure the overall integrity of Indian gaming.
Of course, right.
And in order to do that, that requires us to facilitate dialogue and discussion with other federal partners, mm-hmm. as well as other other stakeholders. As we do that, it's an ongoing responsibility of ours to talk to folks who may not be as knowledgeable about the history of Indian gaming as NIGC is, to explain how is IGRA implemented, what differences between Indian gaming and other industries. And we do that by talking about, the history of IGRA, the history of the case law that governs our activities. An important part of that history, an important part of today's realities, is that most tribal facilities are small or medium operations.
Right.
When people hear the number of $30 billion, there's a perception that tribal nations are rich.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of tribal operations are small or medium-sized operations, and we think it's important for us to talk about what Indian gaming is, namely an important means to self-determination, and the fact that for many Native communities, these are job programs that need to be supported by their partners, the regulatory partners.
Sure.
So that brings us back to rural outreach.
Right.
That brings it back. So we're not just here to talk about supporting large operations. We're going to continue to do whatever we can to. Some of our trainings are tribally requested,
mm-hmm.
and they're all
right.
free of charge, so they can be tribe specific. But some of our trainings are specifically geared to new operations, to new regulators who are starting up their operations. And that's an important service when you're talking not everybody is a billion-dollar enterprise.
Right.
A lot of these, a lot of communities are effectively jobs programs, and we care about jobs in Indian culture.
Absolutely. Great. Well, I just have one more question, and I think I ask this of every chairman and every commissioner. There has been a long-time perception out there that, Indian gaming is unregulated. And, of course, we know it's not, that it's even more regulated than commercial gaming. Do you think, however, that perception is kind of old school, that we've gotten beyond that now?
I sure hope so. Given the good work that you and other folks who pay attention to the industry are doing to talk about the three-tiered regulatory structure, I sure hope we're beyond that. But you can never talk about it enough. Tribal communities have really approached gaming as they have many activities in Indian country, and that's with perseverance and creativity. That perseverance and creativity has led to innovation, especially in the area of Class 2 gaming, despite three levels of regulation, federal, tribal, and depending on the given compact state. To be able to innovate and have a healthy industry despite those layers of regulation is a remarkable achievement, and that goes to the perseverance and creativity of Indian country. Now, we do our part to make sure that we're performing our regulatory duties, but we do it in a way that doesn't create artificial roadblocks
mm-hmm.
to the entrepreneurial spirit of tribes. So we're not about creating unnecessary roadblocks to economic development. And I think that's a good approach and a good lesson moving forward. But regulated, Indian gaming is very regulated.
Right. And I think you're seeing that in any progressive regulatory environment these days. Certainly in New Jersey and Nevada, where the regulators no longer get in the way of development. And I think that's a wise thing to do. And Catherine, just one last question for you. What have you learned in your first year as vice chair that you didn't really expect to learn when you first came on?
Well, I've been incredibly impressed by the level of sophistication and really capability of tribal regulators, of tribal industry, of our staff at NIGC. I think everyone is incredibly talented and does an incredible job here. I think I've just been really impressed with the people that we get to work with.
Great. Well, thanks for the time. It's an honor to talk to both of you, and I think you've been doing a great job in your term here, and hopefully it will be extended when the time comes. We really look forward to talking to you many more times.
Well, thank you, Roger. And again, thank you for the work that you do and continuing to educate the public on Indian gaming.
Great. We'll keep it up. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed this edition of the GGB podcast sponsored by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing partner for online and land-based casinos. If you want to hear more about the topics discussed today, visit GGBMagazine.com for all the news and trends in the casino industry. For weekly updates, subscribe to GGB News, which delivers all the news of the gaming industry to your desktop, waiting for you every Monday morning. Please join us next week for another edition of the GGB podcast, and don't forget to follow GGB on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Have a great week.